And welcome to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN. Well, joining me today on this edition of the Eye on College Football podcast is CBSSports.com college football insider, Mr. Jeremy Fowler. Jeremy, how you doing, man?
I'm good. That was quite impressive, that advertising you just did. We're
very thankful for our sponsor, Squarespace.com, and we are very glad that they are interested in the Eye on College Football podcast. You've been a pretty busy guy. If you follow Jeremy on his blog on CBSSports.com or on Twitter at JFowlerCBS, you know that he's been going through the Lone Star State. You went to Texas A&M. I believe you also dropped in at Baylor. Correct me, add any others that I might have missed, but what are some of the things that have stood out to you as you go through some of, I guess this is your spring tour?
Yeah, I hit up 4 schools in 4 days in the Texas area. I hadn't spent a lot of time in there last year, and I switched it up during some of these spring tours. I wanted to hit regions and just drive around as opposed to going to one school on a flight, you know. So I stopped in TCU for a day, then went straight to Baylor. Then went to Texas A&M, caught their new renovation they got going on Kyle Field.
Oh, yeah.
And spent a lot of time in Texas briefly. I was there like a few hours before I flew out, but I sat down with Charlie Strong, which is good. I don't think he had done much since he took the job, so still good to catch him. And he had a few interesting nuggets to say.
What was just talking about? I know that a lot of hubbub about the play calling has sort of been one of the storylines now. What was some other stuff that stood out to you from talking to Coach Strong?
Yeah, that's the thing, is the play calling sticks out because it's been sort of a little bit of a convoluted mess for them, because Charlie said that Sean Watson was going to call the plays. I think Joe Wickline, guy who came over from Oklahoma State, was supposed to. It's in his contract, or else they have to pay like a $600,000 buyout, unless he has play calling duties. So it's pretty obvious that Charlie is trying to satisfy both parties and protect Texas from not having to pay, but also making it clear that Sean Watson's his guy. So it's kind of a weird dynamic, but when I talked to him, he's like, yeah, Sean's my guy. He's going to have the final say. So everybody was up in arms about it. But yeah, he was just talking about how he's ready to embrace the challenge of Texas politics. That seemed to be the biggest knock on Charlie when the hire came out, or at least what us media hacks were complaining about, where, you know, Charlie was considered introverted at Louisville. Can he handle this kind of beast? And maybe that's overblown. You know, after spending some time with him in Texas, it seems like that he's going to be fine. He can turn it on when he needs to.
Yeah, he would had times at Louisville where he would seem to be frustrated with some of the media pressures, and I could see how those small instances would change. But I think also as a coach, your expectations change moving to a place like Texas. Did it seem like he understood that?
Oh, no doubt. And I guess the reasons he was frustrated were problems that he wouldn't have, or why he was frustrated at Louisville were problems he won't really face at Texas, because he will get plenty of spotlight at Louisville. It sounds like he was a little ornery about not getting the spotlight when, you know, he has a good team and they're having a spring practice, and he said nobody showed up one day because Louisville basketball was going to the Final Four, which is understandable. All the media was in New Orleans for Louisville to play Kentucky in the Final Four. So nobody was at his practice, but I think he took that as a slight at the time. And so there's always a delicate balance between media relationships or the way media covers a team that maybe isn't a top 10 program. You know, Ohio State's going to get coverage, Notre Dame, Florida, those schools. When you have a Louisville that's up and coming, it's like, okay, hey, we're winning 10, 12 games a year. We want the coverage. And I think Louisville was willing to give that to him, but not on that weekend. And so, you know, because everybody's the Final Four. So it was a weird dynamic. He took that as a slight. He closed practices. Next thing you know, he's labeled as sort of an introvert or a guy who's just not accessible. And, he, you know, he's had his moments. I covered Florida. You know, he wasn't always as affable as you would think somebody in the Texas position would be in. But, you know, I've learned over time, knowing him over the years, he can turn on when he needs to. You know, he's got some charm to him. And You know, I thought he handled that situation with Red McCombs pretty well.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, speaking of the balance between football and basketball, if you cruise to CBSSports.com right now, I hope you are following all of the March Madness coverage. Our college basketball team just does a phenomenal job this time of year, every year. You definitely go there. But if you go over to the college football page, and part of our March Madness package is a fun piece that Jeremy put together. It was considering the football and basketball programs combined, tried to create a top 16 ranking. You can go see the ranking there. Jeremy and I here in a bit are going to break through his ranking as well as sort of see how that 16-team bracket might play out from a football standpoint. As we're sitting here, the Wednesday before the first sort of major weekend of the NCAA tournament, do you have any basketball predictions that you want to put on record? Any upsets that you're calling right now?
Let's see. You know, I want to go against the grain because it seems like the trendy picks for the Final Four right now are Louisville, maybe Michigan State because they're healthy. You know, you look at Creighton, it's easy to write them off, but sometimes you just need one great player to take over. If McDermott can get hot, I could see them going through their bracket. You know, I don't know about Wichita State. You know, that, I mean, everybody's made so much of a fuss about their, you know, their side of the bracket having to get through a gauntlet of teams. And I don't think they'll do it. I think at the end of the day, it's just what's great about a tournament is you get one team that just gets hot for six games and it's over.
Yeah.
You know, I like Florida's chances, you know, based on the way their bracket's set up and just a veteran team, all seniors. But, yeah, I look at Creighton. That's a team I think that could maybe make a slight run. That's about the only prediction I've got at the moment.
That's you and Matt Norlander. Matt Norlander's all in on Doug McBuckets. He thinks that this is going to be his time to arrive. So it should be fun to watch. That's why we watch.
Well, he can. That's the thing. He's not one dimensional. He can score inside and out. So if you're desperate, and it's a slow game and it's 50 all, you can still throw it to him, and he doesn't have to get it off the dribble. So that's why I like them.
Absolutely.
But their guard play is a problem. That's the only thing. I don't know if they have the guard play to get it done.
Well, they've got a couple other shooters, so it's not just McDermott. But that's one of those things that if Creighton gets everything firing on offense at the same time, I see what you're saying. They're going to be hard to beat.
Yep.
As always, we have a brief little news and notes segment, and this, of course, is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Our own Bruce Feldman reporting this week that Mike Locksley has locked in a new 3-year contract. He will make just north of $600,000, making him one of the highest-paid coordinators in the Big Ten. Jeremy, this is not a huge surprise, right?
No, you lock up good assistants. It's probably the norm now to do so. You know, contract extensions are sort of protocol at this point for good employees. So, you know, you lock him up, it's good for recruiting, and he is a good recruiter. So you want to make sure that asset is valuable.
Yeah, I looked at this. Number one, it seemed as much a bonus for recruiting, getting guys like Stephon Diggs, and he's so good and well-respected in that highly coveted D.C. area. And the second thing from reading this report, I was like, oh, that's right. We've got to start comparing Maryland coaches and players to the Big Ten. That's wild. I'm still not used to this.
Well, I know. Well, at least Maryland's going to have their Big Ten battles in that area. They got to try to handle, you know, those Beltway areas in Pennsylvania, Maryland, D.C., because you're going to have James Franklin.
Old Terp.
Footprints all over that stuff.
Yeah.
And so those two are going to be going at it, Edsel versus Franklin, along with, you know, Paul Christ, who's in a different league. But, you know, Pitt, a lot of people are going to be in his backyard, probably Maryland included.
Should be fun. And last week you reported about LSU and Syracuse working on a home-and-home for 2015 and 2017. Since then, LSU's AD has basically said it's going to happen. Syracuse coach Scott Schaefer spoke on the possibilities today. And you talked a little bit about LSU's aggressive scheduling and just sort of launching forward from that. Are you hearing more what we expected, that these major conference, you know, former BCS, now I guess Power 5 conference schools, are trying to load up their non-conference with sort of essentially interleague matchups right now?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, if there's one positive byproduct of the 14 playoff, it's that, you know, you got to beef up. You know, this isn't like the SEC in basketball 6 years ago when they all had a weak non-conference schedule. Mike Slive had to beg all his teams to schedule better. You know, now it's to the point where, you know, especially the SEC, you're at an 8-game schedule. They've made a mandate, okay, if we're going to stay at 8, we got to schedule hard. at least one marquee opponent every year, and then plus most teams have that end of year rival, and so it all plays up pretty nicely. You're going to see a lot more of this. Syracuse isn't, you know, a huge home run scheduling game, but they had it's a good team. They've won 15 games the last 2 years in good leagues, especially going to the ACC. They held up pretty well. They're a tough team. Play kind of like LSU style of ball wise, but you're going to see a lot more of that. Just at least with LSU, you know, they had scheduled Wisconsin right. coming up, but then they also had to fill a 2015 spot before the SEC releases all their schedule. So that's why they had to get Syracuse in there.
This is just a reminder that today's podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. And Jeremy, I don't know if you knew this, but Squarespace is constantly improving their platform with new features, new designs, and even better support, constantly updating. So if you do create a business portfolio, I haven't yet, but if you were, then you would be able to constantly stay with the times. Remember, you can start a free trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use that offer code. It is fun to get 10% off and show your support for the Eye on College Football podcast. And now on to the madness of March. You said this sounds like it was a very fun task, right? Seeding these teams?
Oh, no doubt. You're talking about the football basketball season?
Yeah, football basketball, March Madness. Our 16 combined programs. We've even got a first four out. Were you poring over it like your own internal selection committee?
I was trying to. I was basically just looking up records, you know, because you have an idea as to what the programs are all about in football and basketball, but you just got to look at really what they've done, you know, who's actually made runs in the tournament versus just getting there. And then, you know, I didn't really have a advanced metric scale.
Right. You had no RPI here.
Right. No RPI. I just played it how I felt the programs belonged. You know, I put Florida fifth as far as a football basketball program, despite going 4-8 football last year, because, you know, Florida being as dominant as they are in basketball and Florida football being that dominant maybe just a few years ago. Then, you know, you can't just knock them down to a 12 seed because of that 1 year. But how much is too much? You know, you look at a team like Duke, that's a top five for me. They have two great years in football, but is that enough to vault them to a top five spot? Well, maybe Coach K gets you there. You know, it's a weird dynamic. It's hard to judge, but that was part of the fun. You know, you try to do research and just create some talking points.
We'll start in reverse order. You've got a play-in game at 16. I like how you utilize the true NCAA play-in spirit here. BYU and Syracuse, Arizona at 15, Oregon at 14, North Carolina at 13, Kansas State at 12, 11 UCLA, teams that just missed the cut, Stanford, Arizona State, Texas, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh. What were some of your internal battles? I know you said in the post that especially on the back end, that was where it got really tough.
Yeah, because on the back end you have Syracuse, which isn't a traditional football power, at least in the last 12 to 15 years, but they've had a decent 2-3 year stretch here, kind of similar to Arizona. They're sort of mirroring programs right now where they're, you know, they're in that upper echelon of basketball, probably top 10 programs, but football, they're still trying to come up. So I gave Arizona the edge over, say, a Syracuse, in part because you look at Rich Rod, accomplished coach, kind of has them on the upswing. The program seems to have more momentum than, say, a Syracuse in football does. But then you look at a team like Stanford that I left out in favor of Oregon, up around that 13 to 16 seeding. I have Stanford out because I think they had gone 6 years without getting to the tournament this last year, despite the football team doing so well. And going to Rose Bowls. So it's that weird dynamic. You hardly have programs that are great at both at one time. They might be decent, and they might have a basketball team that goes to the tournament every year, but to have two dominant forces at the same time, like maybe a Michigan State and an Ohio State, is tough to get.
Right, and a UCLA at an 11, you would say that is a program that could be trending up in both directions with Steve right. Alford now and then Jim Mora, and you noted in the post, both of them have only been there for, you know, three combined years, but that's one that could right. be moving up.
Right. The UCLA basketball can be all over the map with Steve Alford. We don't really know. I mean, you think worst case they're going to be decent because at Iowa and New Mexico, he at least had a competitive team, but, you know, he doesn't regularly get to the Sweet 16 or the Final Four. So you wonder how that's going to factor in long term. But Jim Mora, he was a guy that was coveted by several jobs in the offseason. You know, they're starting to win more and more. Brett Hundley's coming back, could have a big year next year. So I thought 11 was a good spot for them.
Number 10, Oklahoma State. Number 9, Baylor. Number 8, Wisconsin. Number 7, Oklahoma. Number 6, Michigan. Did you have any internal struggles there with that little group of five? Anyone that you might change now?
No doubt. Well, Michigan's tough because they struggled last year, winning 7 games under Brady Hoke. So, you look at coaches, especially basketball, you can put more weight on coaches and how established they are, knowing that they're going to get you a top seeding, even if the football school is lagging a bit. You know, John Beilein, he's a guy I think is one of the best coaches in the country. So I feel comfortable putting them at 6, knowing that, you know, the basketball team's always going to be great. And then the football team, just 2 years ago into the Sugar Bowl, they're still Michigan, you know.
Right.
But it's not the same right now. So you could have put a Michigan at maybe an 8 or 9 and justified it, but I put him at 6. A little too high, but whatever. And, you look at Baylor. That was the one I struggled with the most, maybe in the top 10, because Scott Drew, I'm giving him a lot of weight going to 2 Elite Eights in the last, 7 years or so. But they've had a few NIT appearances, a few where they missed the tournament. So you should that knock them down in favor of maybe an Oklahoma that has a long Kruger that's been to the 2 straight tournaments. But he's known as a good coach. Football program's always top 10 or so. But, you know, the way Baylor football played last year, that kind of gave him a tiebreaker there.
Mm-hmm. All right, you just talked about Florida, just sort of not discounting them for 4-8. Duke getting a lot of help from Kay, and probably just with Cutcliffe and the general. Would I be assuming too much in saying probably just seeing the general trajectory of that program also for the on the football side?
Yeah, I think so. It's throwing Duke football a bone here just because of – I mean, you taught other coaches around the ACC. What they did the last 2 years is just insane, considering that they just, you know, they're not really winning recruiting battles against the top ACC schools. You know, teams don't go up against them thinking, wow, Duke's imposing. Duke's going to overmatch us and outmuscle us at the line of scrimmage, you know.
Yeah.
But they win these games, and it's just wild. So even if they don't win 10 games every year, it's an established program. And then, you know, really, Tom Izzo and Coach K were the two coaches in that top 5, well, with Donovan as well, but the guys that give you an automatic edge where you can justify putting them high.
Number 3, Louisville. Number 2, Ohio State. And number 1, Michigan State, the top seed. Any battles there? Did Ohio State get knocked off by Michigan State because of that Big Ten championship game?
we might need to get Urban Meyer another slice of pizza.
Yeah.
Ground of sorrows.
That's right.
You could... That one you could really flip-flop, and either could go in that top spot. Just giving the edge to Izzo over Thad Matta was probably the tiebreaker. Nothing against that, but it's just, you know, it's Tom Izzo. And the only hesitation with Michigan State at 1 is that I think they won 7 games a few years ago during the regular season. So they had essentially 1 off year in the last 4 years. But if you look at it, I mean, they're averaging 10.5 wins during that span with a Rose Bowl. I'll take it. You know, it's Antonio's finally getting the credit that he had built up and probably should have been getting a while back and never did.
That one bad year was the one that ended in the horrendous Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl against TCU, where, like, neither team was as good as they should have been that year,
right,
and no one wanted to win. It was painful.
I don't think anybody wanted to be there.
No, certainly not. As always, when the brackets and seedings are released, there are people who scream conspiracy. And I sat down here because I figured it'd be fun to play out the bracket, and I'll probably figure out a way to include it in the blog post for this podcast. So if you're listening on iTunes, go check it out on cbssports.com. But man, we've got some conspiracies looking at the way these seeds play out, because you've got your Duke at 4 that happens to be lined up against UNC at 13. Huh, funny how that works. You've got your Oklahoma at 7, happened to be lined up against his bedlam rival, Oklahoma State, at 10. And man, there's also just some fun matchups. So, Jeremy, we are just considering just general football program, you could say, last year, this year, but nothing too serious. BYU over Syracuse, what do you think? Who would you give the edge to for football there for our play-in game?
Still give it to BYU because they can put enough offense up there. Now they're going to a no-huddle, 100-plus plays a game style of offense, Taysom Hill, quarterback, I like my chances. But it'd be tight. You know, Syracuse, they keep everybody pretty low. You know, they don't really get blown up very often.
Then are you feel comfortable moving the Michigan State on to the next round against BYU with Connor Cook coming back?
Yep. That's a lock. I mean, that's one of those Florida versus Albany matchups right now.
This would be so much fun. Wisconsin against Baylor in our 8-9 matchup. what do you think about that one?
It's like ball control versus neon helmets and 70 points a game.
Exactly.
That would be terrific. I'd love to see what Gary Anderson would do to game plan for that. that would honestly be fascinating. You know, you look at the thing about Baylor, you have to disrupt their rhythm somehow. I don't know how you do that, but Oklahoma State was able to do that. I think it's create a few turnovers. With Wisconsin's defense last year, I think they could maybe pull it off. I really do.
With the linebackers?
Keep it manageable. Keep Baylor to like 28 points or so. I could see them pulling that off, and that'd be one of those 7-10 upsets. Or no, is that an 8-9?
That's an 8-9 game, yeah.
Yeah, so it could go either way, but you know, I'd probably go Wisconsin. I don't know. I could be wrong there, but you know, they can. With the team they had last year, they could have easily won 10 or 11 games and been more in the BCS picture than they were.
Yeah, absolutely. That defense, particularly the linebacker position, just stocked. So one team that does play Baylor very well in terms of managing them is in our next matchup, Kansas State. The 12 seed going up against the 5 Florida. Now, Kansas State does good against the juggernauts, Jeremy, and this is a 5-12. But would you pick Kansas State over Florida for the classic 5-12 upset?
If we're talking about football. Kansas State might as well play Georgia Southern play that role. I think with Bill Snyder's team, knowing that they always have pretty good depth, good quarterback play, they're not going to make mistakes. And that's all Florida did last year was make mistakes, and I like my chances with Kansas State. Although Florida, I will say, you know, if they just stay healthy this year, it's not going to be nearly as a disaster as it was a year ago. Actually, no lie, I talked to a coach that seems to think that they could have sort of an Auburn-like resurgence next year, an SEC coach. Maybe not 12, 13 wins, but that they're going to be the team that kind of reemerges into the light again.
This loyal listeners of this podcast will know that just last week, Jerry Hinnon and I each unknowingly picked Florida as our SEC sleeper because they might be expected to win 6 or 7 games, and it wouldn't surprise me if they won 9 or 10.
Right, because the bar's so low that it's a safe pick, no doubt.
Duke and North Carolina, aforementioned rivalry game. Who are you giving the edge to for football?
Ooh, that's tight. Because, you know, Larry's bunch played pretty well at the end of the year. I know Duke beat them. I'd have to go with UNC. I mean, watch them in that Belk Bowl. They finally seem to have some command offensively. Marquise Williams is getting more comfortable. It'd be tight. Again, it'd probably be more like that 27-25 game they had in late November last year. But I'm going to go with Fedora getting just enough offense to get it done.
I'm looking forward to that game being a Thursday night game in Durham this year. Let's go ahead and take care of the top. Michigan State and Wisconsin, Big Ten rivalry. Football, who are you giving the edge to?
Spartans, no question. The way they were playing last year, the defense they had, they didn't even need Max Bolla in the title game or in the Rose Bowl and still got it done. You know, they just had defensive weapons everywhere. Wisconsin's running game would get, you know, they'd move downfield a little bit but wouldn't be able to score enough in that one.
And Bill Snyder slows down Larry Fedora's fat, smart, fast, and physical offense? Or do you think that Marquise Williams and his all those young running backs are able to find some holes in Bill Snyder's defense?
So this is a 12-13 game at this point, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Is that what we have?
Yep, we do.
Awesome. So, boy, you know, I think Kansas State, I like the Wildcats. If you saw the way they played against Michigan at the end of the year last year, in the aforementioned Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl, they kind of have their mojo back a little bit, kind of the feeling of 2012 when they really had it rolling. So I'm going to go Kansas State.
All right, down to the 6-11 round of 64, first-round game, Michigan and UCLA.
UCLA, no question. Michigan was this convoluted mess last year. They need a reset button. And so, yeah, we'll give it to Jim Morris' squad. I mean, they were loaded last year.
all these teams that were anchored up by their basketball programs are getting their cards shown right now. At the 14 seed, Oregon taking on Louisville, which is in the 3. And if we're going football, you got to go Ducks, right?
Oh, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt. You said Oregon, Louisville, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No question. If Mariota's knee held up last year, they might have won a title, no joke. His knee was shot. They couldn't run the ball, had design runs for him. Healthy Mariota, I'm taking the Ducks.
Then we've got our Bedlam game in the 7-10, Oklahoma State.
Oof, that's tight, because we saw the way that game last year went. It was just nuts.
Yeah, it was bonkers.
But Oklahoma, you know, with the way they're surging right now, Trevor Knight, you just give him, you know, a little bit of that proverbial swag that he got in that Alabama game. If he carries that over into this one, I don't know if Oklahoma State has the weapons. They lose a lot of guys on defense this year. You know, if we're going by 2014 rosters, definitely Oklahoma. But go by what was going on last year, Cowboys would still have a shot in Stillwater. But, you know, Oklahoma's got some juices. The way they were working at the end of the year, both in their favor here.
Yeah, I mean, you finish with the Bedlam win, and then the Sugar Bowl victory. It's impressive. All right, yeah. We're going our 2-15 Ohio State and Arizona football.
Yeah, that's no question. Braxton Miller back. You know, Richrod's going to get some offense on him because the secondary for Ohio State was so shoddy at times last year. But the offense will do just enough. Give it to Carlos Hyde. Let him get his 30 carries and be done with it.
If we're talking about 2014, it means we got Jesse Scroggins in there for Arizona.
That's a good point. I know. I keep fluctuating, don't I? I'm either going by 13 or 14 rosters. If we're going by 14.
I'm still Ohio State. It's still an unknown
at quarterback for Arizona. Yeah. They have like 5 or 6 quarterbacks. I still don't know what they're going to do there. You're right. It might be Scroggins, but you know, I'm going to go with the safe bet, Braxton Miller.
All right, UCLA and Oregon. Ooh, nice Pac-12 matchup. Look at this.
I like that. Oregon wears you down, though. They have enough offense where the second half they can kind of control the clock on you and do what they want to, move downfield. So I'm going to take the Bruins in a loss there out of the tournament.
And then the Sooners and the Buckeyes. Man, that is a blue blood. That's going to break all the cable ratings right there.
Well, yeah, if Oklahoma brings Jalen Saunders back, he's gone now. But the way he's playing at the end of last year, I like my chances with the Sooners. If he gets 20 to 25 touches. But they still have enough. I like the Sooners. They're going to be the favorite in the Big 12. So I'm going to give them the edge here of Ohio State.
All right, we've got our Final Four, Michigan State, Kansas State, Oregon, and Oklahoma. First up, Michigan State and Kansas State. What do you think?
Kansas State is the Final Four. Amazing. I'm going to go Michigan State. No question.
Number one seed in against a 14 and a 7 in the other side, Oregon.
There's no way that would really happen.
Right.
Maybe like 1 out of 10 years if it's BCU Butler again. But
Oregon
what's
and Oklahoma.
What's the matchup? Sorry.
Oregon and Oklahoma.
Oregon. That's a great game, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Oregon. They got a lot of players back from the draft. Almost every team got hit and decimated by the NFL draft from juniors declaring, except for Oregon. They kept a lot of their key guys. And really losing D'Anthony Thomas, I don't think they had much of a problem with it. Because he was kind of a malcontent. So they can move on, and you know, they're going to have just enough. Defensively, Oklahoma's going to be better up front. They're going to be able to move the ball on Oregon's defense, but it's going to be one of those 40 to 30 games.
And in the finals of the Jeremy Fowler Invitational, seeded by programs and decided on the football field, the top seed Michigan State against the Cinderellas, the 14 Oregon. Who you picking?
Michigan State, Oregon. What a fascinating matchup. See, these are the games that we don't get. This is why we need a playoff.
Right.
We need four teams like this. Let's see. That is really tough. Michigan State, Oregon. I'm just trying to think of how they're matching up best. I think I'm going to have to go Michigan State because they're just, you know, they have such an identity on defense and they're so stout and they can play man defense and they stop the run, and that's what Oregon's going to try to do on you. They're not really going to fall for Oregon's misdirection all game. You know, they're just going to sit there and wait to tackle you.
Yeah.
They might give you 5-10 yards here or there. But, you know, the defense is just too good. Even coming back next year, losing guys are going to be able to plug them in. So I like Michigan State in a close one. Oregon's going to get their offense. It's probably going to be, you know, 30 to 27.
An instant classic.
That would be a terrific game.
Yeah.
It really would.
It really would.
We need more of these. We need to send this bracket to Bill Hancock and college football playoff and have him make it happen now.
I'll send him this podcast and ask him if he will subscribe. I'm not afraid. And maybe he'll go to squarespace.com/CBS Sports and use the offer code FUN. Jeremy, thank you so
much.
Plug. I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day to hop on the podcast. This has been fun.
No problem, man. Anytime. Appreciate it.
A reminder that if you subscribe on iTunes, you get the podcast before they hit CBSSports.com. So make sure you go ahead and do that. For Jeremy Fowler, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.